Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
That turncoat Spector finally goes back to being a low-life lawyer where he started in Philadelphia. As you may know, Spector is perhaps the greatest emblem of everything wrong with American politics. He began as a Democrat. He hit a murderer. He helped the murderer escape justice in America named Ira Einhorn, helped him get out of the country. Then when the time was moving to the center, he became a Republican along the lines of Bloomberg, who claims to be a Republican. And then when things got tough for him, Spector switched back to being a Democrat. I want to talk instead about the new Arizona immigration law, because many of you liberals are hysterical. You're wrong, and I'm going to prove you to be hysterical and wrong. What you don't know is that the new Arizona law, which you call fascist and Nazi, mirrors federal law. Federal law already requires aliens, that would be your constituency, aliens mean non-citizens, to register and carry their documents with them, 8 U.S.C. 1304E and 8 U.S.C. 1306A. The new Arizona law simply states that violating federal immigration law is now a state crime as well. And because illegal immigrants are by definition in violation of federal immigration laws, they can now be arrested by local law enforcement in Arizona. How many different ways do I have to tell you, hysterical liberals, that the new Arizona law mirrors federal law? It is not a new law. It only permits the state to do what the federal government refuses to do, even though the laws are on the book. Now, but I want to talk to a more fundamental point, which is the hysteria and lies of the radical left in the media and the government complex. The left is defaming Arizona and the people of Arizona by using the word Nazi. They're keeping hoodwinked into thinking that somehow these laws in Arizona are exactly what went on in Nazi Germany. This couldn't be further from the truth. Do you know actually what happened, what the Nazis did actually? Do you have any idea what actually happened? I don't know how any Jewish Holocaust survivor or any supporter of any Jewish causes cannot be sickened by this watering down of the word Nazi or fascist. The Nazis didn't just arrest people. The Nazis actually tortured people and then sent them to death camps. The people of Arizona are not going to simply round people up because they're Hispanic. The law says that there has to be reasonable suspicion that the person that they arrest is an illegal alien. Again, let me repeat, in case you missed it, the new Arizona law mirrors federal law, which already requires your friends, your constituents, that is aliens, that is non-citizens, to register and carry their documents with them, 8 U.S.C. 1304E and 8 U.S.C. 1306A. Send that to Janet Napolitano. The new Arizona law mimics the federal law that Janet Napolitano and Barack Obama will not enforce. Nazism? What a disgrace. The Nazis didn't deport people. The Nazis sent them to concentration camps to be slaughtered by the millions. This has nothing to do with Arizona's immigration law. But let me ask you about the following acts that occurred on the Democrats. Let me ask you if those acts mimicked in any way that of the Gestapo or of Nazis. What about Janet Napolitano's black helicopters who went after the Michigan militia? Does that sound like Nazism to you? So again, I ask, if you want to talk about real Nazism, real fascism, let's talk about when the FBI shot Randy Weaver's wife and child to death under Bill Clinton. Did that sound like the Nazis? What about when Janet Reno burned dozens of people alive at the Waco compound in Texas? Did that sound like actual fascism and Nazism? The media didn't call it at that time. So before the illiberal fascists of the left start calling maliciously this name and that name, they really ought to look at the history of what Nazism actually is. Moreover, they ought to look at the hypocrisy of Mexico itself. Remember yesterday I told you how Mexico the government that is criticizing the people of Arizona for passing this law, how Mexico itself treats immigrants from Guatemala and other countries? Well, here's a report from the liberal Amnesty International. And Amnesty International, of course, I guess is now a conservative group. But Amnesty International says that many immigrants into Mexico are getting pulled off trains, kidnapped en masse, held at gang hideouts. They're beaten, raped, or killed. One female immigrant was robbed and forced off a train by Mexican federales and subsequently attacked by a gang and raped in Mexico. This is from Amnesty International. So this is about Mexico itself and how they treat illegal immigrants. They take them off trains, they beat them up, they rob them, and they rape them or they kill them. So the next time you hear a liberal talking about how fascist Arizona is, ask your lib friend if they know how they treat illegal aliens south of the border down Mexico way. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. If you care to talk about these or any other topics, the phone number is 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let us begin across the country, across the land, north, south, east, and west. It is the Savage Nation. I don't know if I want to do this anymore today. What else do I want to talk about? Well, we got some good sound bites of all of the hysterical liberals whose constituency is largely illegal aliens, meaning non-citizens. How in the world can Mayor Bloomberg say that we're committing national suicide by clamping down on illegal aliens? Many people would say that we committed national suicide by permitting rhinos like him to run as Republicans. Can you believe this? The left-wing academics, the media illegitimi, the government illegitimi are hysterical as usual, misquoting the law as usual, and mischaracterizing a law which actually mimics federal law. The state law in Arizona is a direct mimic of the federal law. But you wouldn't know it coming out of Obama or Holder's mouth or any of the academic know-nothings. I guess they don't even know their own laws because they're not enacting them. They're not following them. So here's a state that's had enough of the drug dealing, enough of the rapes, enough of the murders, enough of the robberies, enough of the destruction of schools and hospitals. And they said enough is enough. Every state needs laws like this because really they mimic federal law. Right away, the left goes into overdrive and hyperbolically starts saying Nazi and fascist, without even understanding that they're actually defaming all of the Jews, all of the socialists, all of the gypsies, and all of the priests who stood up to Hitler. The minute you start throwing Nazi and fascist around, what you're doing is you're insulting the graves of those who were killed by the Nazis and fascists. But, you know, I don't expect anything more from an illegitimate, ignorant left. I went back into one of my earlier books, The Savage Nation, and look at the sound bites I found. Tell me if they still don't apply. The future of America hangs in the balance like a loose tooth. Liberalism is a dangerous mental disorder. Like decaying civilizations of the past, America's fall will come from the decadence within and the security threats from without. A liberal is someone who wants to understand the guy who just broke into their house, who burnt the place down, who raped his wife and who murdered his kids. He wants to understand them. Let's see. I'm trying to find those that would fit. In the leftist-leaning America of today, you're free to believe whatever you want about religion, unless you're a Jew or a Christian. You know what the greatest pleasure I have every day on my show? I love the taste of liberals in the afternoon. They're particularly succulent by the end of the day. Oh, let's see. I refuse to whistle Dixie while my country is being overrun by psycho-lib commu-Nazi organizations like the ACLU, who defend child molesters and terrorists. Back when America was still moral and whole, our meatballs were big, soft, and tasty. Now that we've become immoral and mean and socialist, our meatballs are like Swedish meatballs, small and tasteless. Let's see. In America, I better not read this one. It's liable to really set off a shockwave. Well, there's other things like that. The Founding Fathers guaranteed us freedom of religion, not freedom from religion. I like that one. Also, here's a few others that I wrote back. Then one dirty bomb can ruin your entire day. We need more patent and less patent leather. Most listeners don't know the difference between linguine, fettuccine, and Mussolini. I long for the time of the past when the chrome was thick and there was much less hate. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So I'll be right back.
Savage. We'll be right back.
let's all pull back. Let's stop letting the liberals characterize the people of Arizona as Nazis and fascists when, in fact, the state law mimics federal law to the T. That's number one. Number two, you must not let liberals use the word Nazi and fascist so in such a cavalier fashion, because it does a terrible, terrible disservice to the millions of people slaughtered by Nazis and fascists. And number three, I got to remind you again that I am the son of an immigrant. I come from an immigrant family. I lived in an immigrant community. I have frequented immigrant communities. So don't lecture me about immigration and immigrants. I know all about it. And of course, I am not naive. Of course, I'm aware what the derogatory, know what it meant, without papers. I'm aware of that. But there's a huge difference between a trickle of immigrants who came into the country without papers and a flood. There's a big difference between a trickle of immigrants who came into the country without papers and were necessary in order to fuel the factories. And this wave of immigrants coming into a country that is bankrupt, broke, kaput, out of money, no gold, no government, no backing whatsoever. There are no jobs. The people in this country need help, not illegal immigrants. And now go to the next step. We just had Obama jam down our throats health care, health care, health care, health care. For 1 year, he catered to the illegal immigrant mobs. For 1 year, he catered to La Raza and the illegal immigrant mobs. And the reason I say it is that the largest majority of this population that is not covered by health care are illegal immigrants. The whole damn thing was meant to satisfy La Raza and the illegal immigrant communities. And that's still not enough for them. After getting illegal immigrant health care jammed down our throats, now they want citizenship and they want to be rewarded for breaking the law. And the people have finally said no to the federal government, who is breaking the law itself. So who is the lawbreaker? The lawbreaker is the federal government for not following their own laws. If they don't like the law that says that they have to carry papers, and I'll repeat the law again, the Arizona law mirrors federal law, which requires your friends, the illegal aliens, non-citizens, to register and carry their documents with them. It's 8 U.S.C. 1304E and 8 U.S.C. 1306A. If the federal government wants to repeal that law, then let them have a healthy debate about it in Congress. That's the proper place to do it, not in the newspapers by characterizing the American people as Nazis and fascists. Now, having said all of that, I'm going to cool down this truck called the Savage Nation. I'm going to cool it down by going back to another time when I continuously ate in immigrant communities. I still do, by the way. I always eat in immigrant communities, the only place I like to eat other than in my own house. And years ago, I lived in New York. Growing up as I did, there were lots of immigrant restaurants. And one of them was a restaurant for poor people that served great Italian food on 14th Street in New York. And I remember when I was a little boy, my parents would take me into this restaurant, how great it felt to be there. And years ago, I was invited by some Italian friends at a museum to deliver this poem to the audience. It's called When Pasta Was Spaghetti. Listen to it. The hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture, an offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's clam bar, the one behind the greased over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then, in neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fogged-over window on a cold winter's eve. There was life. Marinara sauce that smacked to the sea. Noodles as long as your young arm. Meatballs as fluffy as your dream of them. Bread on the table you'd eat against your parents' admonitions that the meal was coming, the meal was coming. And men, some burly with black hairy forearms whose smile scared you, and little skinny guys with the look of murder on their faces, and people who slurped their spaghetti straight to their mouths from the plate, one motion like Chinese shoveling rice at mouth with clicking sticks. That was gusto before it became a beer ad. That was taste before it became a synonym for fashion. That was spaghetti before it became pasta. What do you want to talk about? The immigrant thing is really a big deal, isn't it? California Jack, welcome to the Savage Nation, 860 on a dial. What's on your mind on 860? Jack, what's on your mind?
I want you to talk about the Hegelian dialectic and how it relates to communitarian law that is at a breakneck pace in this country right now. Marx and Engels picked up Hegel's synthesis. Basically, it's a thesis versus antithesis equals a synthesis. This is the illusion of opposites that I love you for, because you don't take sides, Republican, Democrat. They're all, when they reach the upper echelons, on the same team. These
so you
are,
you understand, when I introduced the term Fabian socialism 3, 4, 5 years ago, I knew that maybe 0.1% of the audience would pick up on it. You were that 0.1%. Wouldn't you agree with me that Obama is only in a long line of plants inside the government in order to usher in worldwide Fabian socialism?
Absolutely. Every president we've had since JFK, every one.
Let's assume that your theory is correct. Who's in charge of it?
Okay, I'll tell you exactly. Many heads of state, many corporations, vice presidents, Goldman Sachs, like you said. See, I'm not saying all corporations are bad, but when they reach that level where money means nothing and it becomes about ideology and power.
So you're saying the transnational corporations, the very large ones, in their own self-interest would rather see national boundaries disappear in order to increase market share, in plain English?
Absolutely.
All right, so that's why the Wall Street Journal is anti-nationalism. That's why the Wall Street Journal continues to editorialize in favor of illegal immigration. That's why a stooge like Bloomberg, who made billions of dollars bamboozling people, says that we're committing national suicide by cracking down on illegal immigrants. I mean, this all fits into your theory, correct?
Absolutely. They want a world with no borders.
Right. And who is it who's been calling the Republicans Rockefeller Republicans, check pants Republicans, ever since I started in radio in 1994? It's me. By the way, I'm going to tell you what. My new book that's going to come out in September is going to shake the world. It's about the Marxist-Leninist roots of Obama and his entire administration, and how he is not alone, and how George Bush actually greased the skids for this downfall of the United States of America. And by the way, they never expected the Tea Parties, which is why they're fighting them. They never thought the American people would awaken from the dead. It's all going to be in my Rocket, the bestseller, in September. I can't even tell you any more about it.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
3 coins in the fountain.
Hi, everyone. It's Savage Nation. It's Mellow Mike. This is Mellow Mike, changing for the time. No longer Michael Savage. This is Michael Mellow. Nothing but nice sounds and nice music in order to soothe Obama and the good communists for trying to bring us to a new progressive America. No more anger, no more heated debate. Thank you for the music, gentlemen. I really appreciate it. How are you folks today? Are you feeling good on your waterbeds out there? Because I'm feeling very, very good on my waterbed today. Now, it is open mic to mic day, but please, I caution you, no anger, no vitriol. Nothing about immigration, because we all know that the good folks from Mexico and Guatemala, Nicaragua, all come here to work. We all know that the radical right has distorted their record here in America. We all know that there's no crime committed by any folk from down south yonder. It's only the white, evil whites who do it. So please, no calls on immigration unless it's to bash the Caucasian. Because, let's face it, I mean, this is a racist nation. Originally it was Hispanic or something like that, according to the left-wing professors. Well, maybe Native American, whatever that might be, and we took it from them, so they're just trying to take it back, and they're kind of brothers in a strange way, according to multiculturalists, because all people of color are brothers in some way, and the only people who are not their brothers are the white people, and therefore they deserve to lose everything. So therefore, let's not do it. Let's all have a good time. Now, the fact of the matter is, we are going to talk about immigration, everything else in the Savage Nation, just that I'm feeling mellow, so I don't want to get angry. I've done it for 16 years. I've told you where I stand on borders, language, and culture. I'll do it. I'll give you the information. Predictably, the idiots in San Francisco and other denizens of stupidity have called for boycotts of Arizona, not realizing that the boycott will affect their own citizenry. As you well know, when you're drugged up on Prozac, as most of the liberals are, and I would say Prozac is the mildest of the drugs that they're on, you have no idea what the hell you're talking about. You're more or less Gordon Brown without an English accent, if you're an American on you get the picture. So what do you want to talk about? Can we do anything other than immigration? I just survived Starbucks and Safeway before the show. How's that? Does that work for you? I went to Starbucks for coffee. Here's what I found in the American workplace. I come in, there's a line of four people. There are six people behind the counter. Only one is preparing coffee. Three of them are making a capa mappa reba papa 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 cheppo, peppa peppa reno peppa pinamino for one idiot. Two of them or three of them are making one drink with cups and containers. They didn't know what they were doing. Two of them were studying a manual on how to serve coffee, how to be a barrister. That's four out of six. One of them was walking in circles by the sink, and one of them was actually serving coffee. Being an impatient guy who had to get to the microphone, I simply jumped the line, went around the idiot standing there like dunces and said, "Can I get a small coffee, please?" Whereupon everyone went, "Ooh." And of course, one of the people with the book came out and gave me a small cup of coffee, and I said, "Thank you," and left. Then I went over to Safeway. Safeway has people in the street saying, "Come in and see the new Safeway." They've just done something to the Safeway I bought in for 10 years. I don't know what they did, but apparently it was free something, soup or pizza. Filled with old liberals getting free soup. You would think it was a soup kitchen. Lining up for a little. Why do they go for these things? You ever see the freebies in supermarkets and the lines of people for a piece of ham, ugly, disgusting old pig soup, whatever? All right, so I wanted a fruit salad. I'm going to tell you what happened. I needed to speak a combination of Mandarin, Tagalog, Arabic, Hebrew, and Spanish in order to get the fruit salad. I never saw anything like it. Hundreds of people running around behind the newly devised, revised, sanitized, homogenized stand at Safeway, and all I said was, "Give me a fruit salad, please." The woman who spoke almost no English, God bless her, she at least wanted to work, put on the gloves. She starts taking the fruit from the bottom, and I say to her, "Give me some of the blueberries from the top of the fruit." You ever see this in Safeway, the good stuff's on the top? She's giving me the heavy, you know, like gritty stuff on the bottom, like the old cantaloupe, the old pineapple. Again, I say in English, "Give me some of the berries on top." Didn't understand the word I said. Three people came over to her in three different languages till eventually three blueberries fell in. I said, "Do I have to get back to work?" The long and short of it is it took me 10 minutes to get a fruit salad in Safeway after speaking English, which nobody seems to speak. So is it any wonder that Americans want immigration reform? I am so tired of pressing one for English. You know, I'd like to press one for deportation, frankly. Now let's go on to the news. So, how about the oil deal out in Louisiana? What do you think about that? What do you think about oil, the offshore oil explosion on the rig by British Petroleum and Obama's reaction of sending in helicopters and tax squads and lawyers? Why would the Justice Department send teams of lawyers to an oil rig explosion and leak instead of sending a cleanup crew from FEMA? This, of course, is going to be much bigger than Bush's Katrina. You understand that. The difference being that the vermin in the media will not cover it in the same manner. Instead of attacking Obama for a lack of reaction, they will attack British Petroleum and oil itself. While under Bush, instead of attacking nobody, they attacked at Bush and said he personally could have stopped the hurricane. Now, I want to ask you something. Why did this rig blow up is the question. What in the hell do you think really happened? Do you think it was terrorism? Do you think the government knows something you don't know? Is it possible that it was an act of terrorism? I'd like to know the answer to that because there's something underneath the scene of all of this, and I can't get to the bottom of it, frankly. Maybe you know something I don't know. The question is, why has the Obama administration been so tepid in its response so far? Asked whether the government has done enough to push oil company BP PLC to plug the underwater leak and to protect the coast, Coast Guard Rear Admiral Sally Bryce O'Hara, Coast Guard Rear Admiral Sally Bryce O'Hara, that's the new Coast Guard for you, said the response led by the Coast Guard has been rapid, sustained, and as adapted as the threat grew. Sounds very much like Janet Napolitano after the Christmas bomber. She probably said everything is perfect. So remember after the Christmas tree bomber was taken down by a Dutch passenger, the government was caught flat-footed? Same here. Government caught flat-footed, but Rear Admiral Sally Bryce O'Hara of the Coast Guard says that the response by the U.S. government Coast Guard has been rapid, sustained, and adaptable. Come on. What, are you kidding me? But as I see every day, the slick's getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and Obama's getting denser and denser and denser. He calls for a moratorium on new rigs, and he doesn't stop the Chinese, the Vietnamese, the Russians, and others from drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. I say, what sense does this make? let me say this. All I ask in this hour is that God give me the ability to remain focused and rational for one straight hour. That's all I ask, is God give me the strength to remain intelligent and rational for another hour, because this is a tough topic, and it requires a great deal of self-control to not get carried away. But the question is, who done it? Who done it? We have an immigration debate in the United States of America, but I think we're now going to have an oil debate. Can you imagine a movie based upon this? I know that many creative types listen to The Savage Nation for ideas, which is great, but this would make a hell of a script. But the problem is the Hollywood leftists would never let a script which shows anyone other than Americans to be the evil ones do it. Now, if they could show a militia doing it, then you have a movie. If somehow they could show that the militia members unfairly being prosecuted by the U.S. government for Michigan snuck out of jail over the weekend, somehow mysteriously with some ray machine, snuck out of jail and flew down there and blew it up, then you'll have a movie that Spielberg would produce. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. I am the Boy Scout Michael Savage. I am the son of an immigrant. I love America. I've had a love affair with America ever since I was born. I will not fall out of love with this mistress of mine called America, ever. I will not stop speaking the truth, ever. I wake up and I see lawmakers siding with lawbreakers, and frankly, it breaks my heart, but it doesn't mean I'm going to give up. It means I'm going to fight harder. I'm going to fight harder. We're living in a world that is upside down. Alice in Wonderland had nothing, it was nothing compared to what Obama's done to this nation. And it's nothing compared to what's going on in the United Nations. Iran, the repressive Iran, the woman-hating Iran, the Iran where the Hitler of the New World, Iran, where the Hitler of the New World Order operates, Ahmadinejad, a nation that beats immodest women, a nation that beheads women. Iran, elected by the United Nations to its Human Rights Monitoring Commission on the Status of Women. Has the world ever been crazier? How in the world can this country survive when we have such weaklings running the world? Very tough they are on American patriots, and oh so pliant are they when it comes to the world's dictators. Which leads us to this issue of illegal immigration again. The illegitimi on the left are hysterical for a change. The hypocrisy of Mexico is overwhelmingly absurd when we know how they treat immigrants themselves, kidnapping, murdering, blackmailing them. Even the left-wing organization Amnesty International has reported on the hypocrisy of Mexico on illegal immigrants, and yet Mexico says, oh, America is a racist nation. And now we have every phony Republican and fraudulent Democrat standing up screaming Nazi, fascist about the law in Arizona. What these ignoramuses don't know is that Arizona's new law actually mirrors federal law. The federal law is clear. It requires aliens, non-citizens, to register and carry their documents with them, 8 U.S.C. 1304E and 8 U.S.C. 1306A. The new Arizona law is identical. And yet you have lawmakers siding with the lawbreakers saying, how dare you insist that we follow the law? Is it any wonder the people are rallying against the illegitimate who are ruining the country? Now, I'm also a realist. I'm a realist because I live in the real world. I don't live in the ivory tower, and I don't live in the media tower of disconnect from reality. I'm a man who actually walks in the streets and talks in the streets. So I see who does the hard work. I'm not blind. I'm not a blind man. I see in every restaurant where I go who does the cooking, who does the busing, who does the waiting. I see it. Well, that's wonderful. I am a man who works very hard, way past an age when many men would be retired. I work because the work ethic was built in me. My father drummed it into me that work was a virtue. Hard work was an even greater virtue. And harder work was even a greater virtue. I don't know. That's the way I was raised. Sometimes I wonder, why do I keep working? The answer is because I have no alternative. So I keep working. Doesn't bother me. It's an ambrosia for me. Work is my ambrosia. I wouldn't know how life could be lived without work. And yet I see millions of bums in America who have never worked a day in their life. Over here where I live, and I live in several different places, by the way, around the country and in this particular area of San Francisco, I see they built housing, for Section 8 housing, primarily for illegal immigrants and gangbangers. They wanted to make sure that the white people of the area had diversity, so they brought them in. And every day I see an illegal immigrant in a wheelchair being pushed around by his wife, smiling as they go. I ask myself, are they kidding me? Are they kidding me? How in the world did they land on Easy Street? How did they land on Easy Street that an illegal immigrant could wind up collecting free care from the United States of America, laughing all the way to the bank? But that's just one example of the other side of the story. The big question is, could America survive without the immigrant labor force? As you well know, the Republicrats say no. And so the fact of the matter is, we have to get down to brass tacks. Who would do these jobs if the immigrants were to repatriate themselves? If they said, you know what, I can't stay in America anymore because they're cracking down on illegal immigration. I don't want to be arrested. It's been fun while it lasted. I have to leave. And they all started, they wouldn't all leave, but let us say 20% of the 30 million started to leave the country. What would happen? Who would take the jobs? Who would do the gardening? Who would do the cooking? Who would do the cleaning? Who would work in the slaughterhouses? The answer is people, able-bodied people on welfare. And you say, oh, what are you talking about? They don't know how to work anymore. Well, they'll learn how to work. Work is something that has to be learned. It is not in the nature of man, by the way, to work. Children are fundamentally lazy and good for nothing unless you teach them to work. They're lazy and good for nothing. They'd rather sit around and they'd rather watch television and eat a free meal and then have you give them an allowance so they can go out and buy some drugs and go to a nightclub until they're 36 years old when Obama finally takes them off health care and they're no longer a child at 26 years of age. Maybe they'll expand it to 36. They can stay home with a hairnet and you know, you both can do your hair together and your nails. The fact of the matter is, a child needs to be taught to work. A child is a formless lump of clay. Children are basically lazy and no good. You have to turn them into a worker. And that has to be done from childhood. So what do you do immediately? Let's forget the pie in the sky, Plato's Republic, reorganizing society. Let's talk about immediately. Let's say 20% of the labor force, which is illegal, goes back home. And suddenly you have jobs begging in hotel chains to make the beds. I know who makes the beds, hardworking Guatemalan and Mexican women. I look at them. I speak with these people. I'm not immune. I can guarantee you I leave bigger tips than the liberals do. I can guarantee you, incidentally. I can guarantee you that the libs, the big mouths, don't give them 10 cents. I can guarantee you I do. So on a personal level, I know what I'm talking about. I have sympathy for hardworking people. But who would take the job is the issue, not whether I tip and you don't. The issue is who would take the job. Are you telling me that the Britney Spears lookalike girls from the suburbs are going to go and make the beds? Are you telling me that the girls from the suburbs are going to go and do menial jobs like becoming a busboy or a busgirl? I'm saying yes, they will have to. As the economy gets worse and worse, as the government finally acknowledges they're just printing money and there is no money, yes, they're going to work again. They're going to learn how to work. Maybe they'll drop a few trays in the beginning, but eventually the girls will learn to work again. The boys will learn how to work again. And then we will open thousands of trade schools across America. You put me in charge of this, I can guarantee you I could straighten this country out in less than 4 years. I would take hundreds of millions of dollars that is being wasted on Nancy Pelosi's road projects, and I would open up trade schools across America. And I said, trade. Don't tell me everyone's ready for college and they all need a computer. Go take a look at what goes on in your colleges. Everyone's a college boy. Take a look with the pants hanging under their behinds. That's a college boy marching around. They want to take a job right away. They're not equipped for anything. They never should have been in college to begin with, 90% of them. Send them to trade school. See if they can even do that. That's not easy to learn how to turn a screwdriver or to cut a piece of wood straight. Go see how hard that is to learn how to be a plumber or an electrician or a carpenter. Or an auto mechanic. We need millions of people retrained to do actual jobs. How is it that the Mexican people can train their men to be good tradesmen? Where did they learn to do this? How did so many Mexicans, for example, learn to do these things? The answer is they learned in their home country, which has a better trade school system than we do. And that is because we have been under the delusion for many years that everyone is a college boy, a white-collar web designer, or God knows what he's going to be, a CEO or a web designer. Come on, and create a website. Maybe you ought to learn how to put a brake into a car. Maybe you ought to learn how to attach a muffler underneath the carriage of a car. And then we could become self-sufficient again from the point of view of labor. But that's skilled labor, my friends. Trade schools are not unskilled labor. That is skilled labor, and we can certainly train an entire generation in less than a year. We train men before World War II how to fly airplanes in a year. We train 17-year-old boys how to fly Mustangs in less than a year. We train them how to drive tanks in less than a year. Don't tell me we can't train a generation how to turn a screwdriver in less than a year. No, it's a matter of whether we have the vision to do it, and we have the leadership to do it, and whether we have the will to do it. The answer is I have it. Do you?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage. You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
I'd like to ask you what you think is coming from Obama in the next few weeks. Now, I understand he wants to do things to the banks. He wants to overhaul the regulations of banks, the biggest overhaul since the 1930s. Many of you knee-jerk conservatives are saying, nay, no good. No overhaul. No, leave the good bankers alone. They know what they're doing. They need $16 billion in bonuses at Goldman Sachs. Well, now I got a little news for you. The banks need to be taken to the woodshed. They need a regulatory overhaul. I agree with Obama. Now, on that, I agree with Obama. Now, I don't care that you see it as anti-business. I don't care what the business people say. I know an awful lot about business, and I'm telling you, those boys on Wall Street not only should have an overhaul, they should be taken over the coals and be given a spanking. After all, we bailed them out. Now they're giving themselves $16 billion in bonuses? No, wrong. So in this one, I say the regulatory overhaul is good. Play some music for a minute.
Lay, 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 lay. Lay across my big brass bed.
You know, I've been as severe a critic of Obama's socialism as anybody in the radio business. In fact, you could say that I predated many in the business in seeing what he was and what he was going to do. But frankly, the banks need to be regulated. And I know many of you can't understand nuance, but the fact of the matter is he's right in wanting to overhaul Wall Street, the biggest overhaul since the 1930s. You have to understand that many of you are just feeding back the lies and the pap that are being put out by J.P. Morgan Chase, Goldman Sachs, and other banks through some of the so-called conservative loudmouths who don't really understand finance at all. I frankly do understand finance, and I am totally in favor of free markets, but there's no such thing as ultimate freedom in anything. In other words, total freedom is anarchy. Let me put it to you that way. Total freedom in any sector leads to anarchy. Take that, Mr. Obama, and run with it. I try to give McCain trickle-up poverty, then listen to me. Maybe you'll be smart enough to listen to me now that Massachusetts has come falling down. Yes, these crooks need to be regulated. Yes, they do. Now, why I am saying that is because I've actually studied the banking laws before the Great Depression, the banking laws after the Great Depression, the banking laws till Bill Clinton came to power and ripped them out and threw them away, the banking laws until Bush threw away what was left, and what happened since Clinton-Bush, and what we have to do now to fix it. And I say yes. I do not reject these proposals out of hand. I would like to see more details. And many of you say, well, Obama's just doing it because it's a populist message. No, I'm sorry. No, I believe that we have to go back to the 1929 stock market crash that ushered in the Glass-Steagall Act. The Glass-Steagall Act was a fabulous act, and it separated commercial and investment banking, which remained law until the Southerner came to power, Bill Clinton, until the man from Hope came to power. Hope again. Gee, two hopes in a row. The Glass-Steagall Act was put in, and it kept banks and investment banks separate. And that was law until 1999 when Bill Clinton evaporated that protection, that wall. And what happened as a result is there were mercilessly large, grotesque, obscene, pornographic profits and bonuses on Wall Street, and you paid for it. They were trading paper that had no substance whatsoever. They were creating fiduciary instruments that don't even exist. They made them up in order to trade them amongst themselves. And as I say to you, I believe that hedge funds need to be separated from banks in order to make riskier investments separate from the banks. You know, that's how I see it. The fact of the matter is I'm not alone in this. Some Republicans actually are taking a wait-and-see approach. Don't assume that all Republicans oppose regulating the banks to some extent. And please don't argue with me that we don't need any regulation. He's attacking capitalism. You don't understand what I'm talking about here. You got to understand there's more to this than meets the eye. That's my opinion. There are many, many intelligent people who see what's going on. But, now here's the but. You can't now rush down the road of everything Obama does is wrong. Because, look, the old joke, even a stopwatch is correct twice a day. I've said this before. Obama happens to be right in wanting to control the bankers. Never mind it's a populist notion. He's right. Taxing the banks is wrong. Let him tax Bonnie Frank and his friends' profits and Fannie and Freddie. Then I'll know that he's trying to be fair. But let's put taxation aside. We had a Glass-Steagall Act of 1933 that established the FDIC in the United States, which we all agree was wonderful. I remember when I was a little boy and I had my first bank account. I was one of these kids who actually had a paper route, worked in a luncheonette till midnight. I saved every nickel in Bankers Trust Company, and I used to love going there by bicycle and seeing my account when they'd add, you know, $2, $10. I felt like I was a rich man building my future. And then there was a strange thing added called interest, and I ran home and said, Dad, what's interest? He said, well, they give you money for holding your money. I said, why? How could they do that without losing money? I said, I thought that they just want to hold my money. He said, no, what they do is they take your money and they invest it, and they make money on it, and they give you some of that. I said, wow, what a great system. And it was a great system until Bill Clinton and Phil Graham destroyed it in 1999. You don't understand that this bill that was passed way back in the 30s, the Glass-Steagall Act, was meant to protect the average little guy. And it allowed the Federal Reserve to regulate interest rates and savings accounts, which was later repealed. But mainly it prohibited a bank holding company from owning other financial companies. That was repealed in 1999 by the Graham-Leach-Bliley Act and was signed by President Bill Clinton on November 12, 1999. So don't say it was Republicans or Democrats. Try to break out of that lockstep mentality and understand that money talks and democracy walks. Write it down. I said it first. When money talks, democracy walks. I don't care who's running it, you know. Now, let's not go to the fact that we don't need regulation. We need it. Regulation is communism. Don't be a fool. Please stop being naive. Would you like to overturn the child labor laws? I mean, we could do that, too. We could bring children in from Haiti and maybe in rural India to work for you for 10 cents a day. Maybe that would also stimulate the economy. Let's get rid of the child labor laws next. After all, that's a law. That's a regulation. You don't need that. Get rid of the child labor laws. We don't need them. That's an evil socialist thing. Child labor laws now. I mean, you understand what I'm saying to you. It's rhetoric. The same way I've said rhetorical things that the morons in England took out of context. You know, unless you understand the context of what I just said, you can say, Michael Savage said repeal the Child Labor Act. I didn't say that.
Savage.
A Pakistani became a U.S. citizen. We hear he's a naturalized U.S. citizen. Oh, hey. Naturalized. So he got a green card. Now he's implicated in a terror plot inside the United States. So let's look at the naturalization process that turns foreigners into Americans. We all know that immigration is a very big issue in America. We know that we're all racists for even asking the question as to why must we have more illegal aliens in America, most of whom do not wave the American flag, but they wave the Mexican flag. Most of whom do not speak English, but they speak Spanish. And, of course, amongst them are many from the Middle East who not only do not speak English, but they would like to kill you. Now, you have to ask yourself, how did they become citizens? How did the guy get a green card? Well, I went and got for you the naturalization paper, the papers. They ask you some very important questions for the year 2010. A bunch of questions they ask you includes these. Between March 23rd, 1933 and May 8th, 1945, did you work for or associate directly or indirectly with A, the Nazi government of Germany, any German Nazi or SS military unit, etc.? This is in the naturalization papers. They're asking what the individual did between 1933 and 1945. There's no question about whether or not you've traveled to Pakistan in the most recent years or your brother-in-law works for Al-Qaeda. Then they ask other very important questions that are really a very good moral character. This is also what our friend from Pakistan had to check yes or no on. And I'm no doubt he had a gentleman from NYU, a lawyer, some very smart immigration lawyer, a very smart immigration lawyer who loves them. A smart immigration lawyer sat with him and said, check, yes, 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 no, no, no. We'll get you in. Don't worry. Don't worry. Ding, ding. D, good moral character. For the purposes of this application, you must answer yes to the following questions. If applicable, even if your records were sealed or otherwise cleared, or if anyone, including a judge, that you no longer have a record. 15, have you ever committed a crime or offense for which you were not arrested, yes or no? So the lawyer from NYU, no doubt someone that the gentleman from Pakistan would like to wring his neck and cut his head off, tells him what to check, yes or no. Have you ever been charged with committing any crime or offense? Have you ever been convicted of a crime or offense? Have you ever been placed in alternative sentence? Have you received a suspended sentence? Have you ever been in jail or prison? If you've answered yes to any of the questions, 15 through 21, so any moron with a 40 IQ knows when you see you go that one, you make sure you say no everywhere, because then you got to complete the following table. This is like an IQ test for someone who has an 80 IQ on a good day with fish oils. Now you go into questions 22 to 33 for the Muslims from Pakistan. They ask, have you ever been a habitual drunkard, yes or no? Have you ever been a prostitute or procured anyone for prostitution? You mean we don't accept pimps in America? You must be kidding me. How in the heck are we going to have a bench for the political class if we weed out all of the pimps from around the world? I mean, I don't understand this. They're weeding out pimps from around the world? How in the heck are we going to have a minor league for the political structure? Have you ever been married to more than one person at the same time? Now, that's a joke unto itself. I have to digress for a moment. You realize that France banned the burqa. See, they're so – even France, even liberal socialist France is stages ahead of us with regard to the threat from Muslims. And so they banned the burqa. As you know, the burqa is not required by the Quran. It's used as a tool of – a political tool. And it's also used as a tool to get welfare. What they found was many Muslim women were coming into welfare offices covering their entire bodies and faces with the burqa. and using separate identities. In other words, they were this one, this way, that way. Don't you understand? And if anyone said anything, they scream, religious this, religious that. We'll go to the Human Rights Commission. How dare you uncover my veil? Who are you asking me anything? It's your country. It's my country. I came here. I own it. You can go to hell, Frenchman. I want that welfare check. So the Muslims in France, we learn, had polygamy is quite common. Now, in America, as you know, Mormons are under the government's eye. The FNLC is constantly being looked at by Department of Homeland Security and the FBI for polygamy, as you well know, because they're a real threat. I mean, I don't know the last time a Mormon set off a bomb, but nevertheless, they're given a life sentence if they conduct polygamy, any kind of polygamy here in America. But apparently, if you're from Pakistan and you have 16 wives and 53 children on welfare, that's acceptable to the United States government under Barack Hussein Obama. So have you ever been a habitual drunkard, a prostitute, smuggled drugs, been married to more than one person? And E, have you helped anyone enter or try to enter the United States illegally? Now, who would answer yes if they did it? Have you gambled illegally or received income from illegal gambling? No, going to say yes. Have you failed to support your dependents or pay alimony? Yeah, you're going to put yes. Have you ever given false or illegal information? So you get the picture. In other words, they get a smart lawyer from NYU whose throat they like to cut on a videotape, cut his head off while chanting. And he tells them what to check, the ACLU lawyer. Military service. Have you ever served in the U.S. Armed Forces? Blah, 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 blah. Selective service. Right? Now, oath requirements. This is what the gentleman from Pakistan had to check yes or no to. Do you support the Constitution and form of government of the United States? Well, you know, the interesting thing here is I'm going to read these to you and ask you. I don't know if you gave these questions to Congress today, how many of them would answer yes. Do you support the Constitution and form of government of the United States? I would say it's 50-50 that the Congress would check yes. Do you understand the full oath of allegiance to the United States? I'd say 90% of them would say no. Are you willing to take the full oath of allegiance to the United States? Every Democrat would say no. If the law requires it, are you willing to bear arms on behalf of the United States? All liberals would say no. If the law requires it, are you willing to perform non-combatant services in the U.S. Armed Forces? The liberals would say no. If the law requires it, are you willing to perform work of national importance under the civilian direction? They would say no because they don't work. Congress doesn't work, as you well know. They just pass laws and tax you. They don't have to perform any work except collect a graft and thing. So here we are, and now we have this, the callers and the state sampling. White male, white male, white male, white male, white male. The citizenship process includes not just background checks, but a citizenship test, which I just read for you, and final interview. Could you imagine the moron who does the interview? Can you imagine the genius, the interview officer working for Obama, who has the authority to reject the applicant at the end of the process? Can you imagine who they have doing these interviews? Could you just imagine the intelligence level of somebody in that job and what position they may take with regard to an Irish nun or somebody from Ireland or Poland as opposed to somebody from Pakistan? The Pakistani is waved right in. That's all, and they fill out the form for him. The Irish war hero is probably told to go to the back of the line because there are too many whites in America already, because most whites are responsible for most of the a crime in the United States of America. So my main point is that, A, we have no one in the government protecting us except the soldiers overseas who are arrested and given court-martials if they actually do their job a little too well. And, B, over here we are overrun with such a state of affairs that the white male today in the United States of America, as a result of the government media complex, the white male today is the equivalent of the black male in antebellum Georgia. That's what's going on today. In other words, the white male is immediately suspect of any terrorist act or any terrorist crime. That's the government under Obama. If you remember, it was Janet Napolitano who took the screed written by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I was the first to, remember, I was the first to tell you who probably wrote it for her when she was roundly criticized for saying we're watching for homegrown terrorists, we're watching for white males, we're watching returning war veterans, anti-abortion protesters, and Tea Partiers. I said this had to be written by the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I even named the guy, and yet it turned out to be him, and he boasted about that he wrote it, and now the government's following this extremist marginal group's ideas of who the terrorists are. They've yet to apologize. They've yet to be thrown out of the White House. We've yet to heard one apology from any vermin in the media who said white male 30 times, except here I am on the air telling you like it is. Right on the level here.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
As you know, Greece is in trouble. Greece is defaulting. It threatens to pull the entire euro down. And the Greeks who have to live through the belt tightening, you know, job cuts, cuts in hours. They're rioting in Greece because they're socialists. And in Athens, there was a protest of 2 million basically government workers and bums on welfare as workers revolted against the government's austerity plan. The same thing that will happen in America when inevitably the Democrats have to finally break the bad news to the dolts in government and the dolts on the dole. And so, therefore, we're going to look at the situation in Europe for a moment because it could hit us very soon. Here's the headline. Man who broke the Bank of England, George Soros, at center of hedge funds betting against crisis hit euro. The man who broke the Bank of England in 1992 is said to be at the center of a plot to cash in on the demise of the euro. George Soros' investment business, Soros Fund Management, is among a group of heavyweight Wall Street hedge funds which have launched a series of massive bets against the euro. Now, I'm sure you're not going to read this story in the corporate-owned newspapers of America, but this is coming to us out of England on the Mail Online, and you're hearing it live on the Savage Nation. So in other words, this currency trader, this currency speculator, who broke the Bank of England and almost destroyed the currency of Malaysia, setting off a record of anti-Semitism around the world because of what he did to the Malaysian currency, is now about to destroy the euro, according to this article. The bets against the euro, they say, came after an all-star ideas dinner in New York, where some of the world's most powerful currency speculators argued that the euro will plunge to parity with the U.S. dollar. The single currency, the euro, has been under enormous pressure because of Greece's debt crisis, plus financial worries in Portugal, Italy, Spain, and Ireland. The euro traded $1.51 in December, but has fallen since to $1.34. We learned that traders are borrowing 20 times the size of their bet, boosting their potential gains and losses so that a euro move to parity with the U.S. dollar could represent a career trade, meaning a trade that makes them $100 million. For example, if an investor puts up $5 million to make a $100 million trade, a 5% price move in the right direction doubles their initial investment. Now, as you well know, it was margin trading of this kind that brought about the stock market crash of 1929, or maybe you don't know that. And this kind of margin trade should be outlawed, but it isn't outlawed because George Soros put Obama in office. He put Obama in office because Obama's just a puppet of him and a puppet of the other bankers who are now going to manipulate world currencies to their own benefit in the estimation of many people who have studied this in great detail. Details of the secretive dinner emerged in the Wall Street Journal just days after Soros warned in a newspaper article that the euro could fall apart even if the EU can agree a deal to shore up support for stricken Greece. Soros, who made more than $1 billion when the pound was ejected from the exchange rate mechanism in 1992, believes the structure of the single currency, meaning the euro, is patently flawed. And he goes on. Soros's fund management group did not respond to calls from the newspaper. Now, I know that this is not a kind of topic that the average listener can call about because you're not speculators. You're working for a buck. You're not a currency speculator. You don't even understand this. But listen to this. A going price for a bet against the euro right now is around 7% of the amount that a parity trade would pay off. So for an investor seeking $1 million bet, the cost is only $70,000. This means that the market currently assigns roughly 14-1 odds that parity will be reached with the dollar. In November, the odds were around 33-1, said a person who's been watching the trade's pricing. Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou last night hit back at the speculators who he blames for preying on the country's troubles. You should see what's going on in Greece right now. There's a magazine, the German magazine Focus, which shows the Venus de Milo giving the middle finger by a headline accusing Greece of swindling its way into the euro. Betrüger in der Euro-Familie. There's three pictures that you have to see. It's a German magazine Focus, which shows the Venus de Milo with a middle finger sticking up at the reader. And it shows the Venus de Milo giving the middle finger with a headline accusing Greece of swindling its way into the euro. Below it, though, is a picture from the Greek newspaper, the Daily Whatever, which is a depiction of the statue of the goddess Victoria atop the Siegessäule in Berlin, holding a swastika early this week in reaction to the Focus cover. So there's a tremendous cultural war going on in Europe right now that is related to the economic war going on right now, which is related to the currency war going on right now, which is related to the crooks who are gambling on currencies right now, who want to destroy families across the world simply to enrich themselves. There's nothing you can say that hasn't been said already. It was speculators who broke America in 1929. It was speculators who broke America in 2009. It is speculators who broke the Bank of England. It is speculators who broke the Malaysian currency. It is now speculators like Soros who will destroy the world in order to have more gain. Now, remember, this man is worth untold billions of dollars. He's in his late 70s, and yet he is still hungry for his next kill. What do you do with predators like him? How do you control currency predators like him? Should currency speculation be outlawed altogether? I frankly think currency speculation should be banned. That's my personal opinion. I believe currency speculation has no place in a sane global order. What do you think? Look, you can talk about it. I mean, there's things that we can say. I'd like to hear from you. Chicago, Eric, you're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, the difference, I think, between 1929 and now is that if inflation occurs against the euro, that's gonna cause a deflation in the U.S. dollar. A deflation in the U.S. dollar means China's going to sell off a lot of their treasury bills that they have against the dollar right now, which is inherently going to boost the dollar and boost the American
economy. Well, let's make it simple for the average listener. If the euro is driven down to parity with the U.S. dollar, it's at $1.34 now, if through currency speculation by Soros and others, the euro is driven to parity with the U.S. dollar, that makes the U.S. dollar more expensive, number one. It also makes U.S. goods more expensive in Europe, which means our trade imbalance will grow even worse. Do you know what's happening around the world? Have you seen what's happening in Greece? Do you know what's happening with the economy? Europe bailed them out to the tune of $1 trillion, and gold went to $1,220 an ounce, $1,220 an ounce. But if you look at the inflation-adjusted prices over the past 30 years, gold could go much higher than that. I've told you about my great advertiser, Swiss America, on this program before. You should reach out to them, SwissAmerica.com. The Greeks waited for a bailout. You shouldn't make the same mistake. Don't wait. Swiss America, now. 1-800-449-8255. Chicago, Joe. I get a lot of callers from Chicago on these topics because Chicago is a mercantile center with a tremendous stock market, and I don't blame them for calling. I'd like to hear what they have to say about this. Chicago, Joe, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, listen, there's nothing wrong with what George Soros is doing as far as speculating goes. These markets are free. These governments are rotten. They're corrupt. He's doing nothing wrong. I've taken orders from George Soros' desk, okay? They lose money on bets as well as make money on bets. And just because the guys tell you that they're going to do a trade doesn't mean that they're doing that trade at all. For all you know, George Soros may be betting the other way. Okay?
I agree. Now, that's interesting. Actually, that's the first thing that came to mind. When I said this little schmuck journalist says Soros is going to bet against the euro, what I said is that's a sucker's article. He's probably betting in favor of the euro. He's trying to sucker millions of people around the world to bet against the euro when he's probably gone long on the euro.
I've seen him do this in Japan when I was trading on a desk in Japan. He's a master at this, okay? You don't make billions of dollars by telling people what you're doing. Give me a break.
No, I agree with that. But let me ask you something, since you're a currency trader or you know something more about this than I do. Do you think the euro will fall or rise?
The euro will fall just because Europe is overvalued. What we think is a rotten house that we have here in the States, Europe is 10 times as bad as us. I actually worked for a German bank at one point that had some lady going around buying in movie productions that took the bank down for $500 million. Do you think that really that they have anything better than what's here in the United States?
Absolutely. No, and it's, of course, the European nations are virtually all socialist countries where there's a phenomenal amount of lazy bureaucrats on monster pensions. I see them in San Francisco on their 12-week summer vacations looking like children at a school picnic, with nothing to do in their lives but walk around taking stupid pictures. I mean, all of that does have to come to an end at some point.
Yes, the sad thing, Mike, is that most people never leave this country. Most people never live outside of this country for 2 or 3 years to get a different perspective on how...
So let us say this happens and the euro comes down to reality, to on parity with the dollar. Doesn't that kill us on the trade imbalance?
Yes, it does. It definitely hurts us, okay? But we haven't been competitive for a long time anyway. What's the difference? We're screwed no matter what.
Wait a minute. What's the difference in our American jobs? Caterpillar, 74% of Caterpillar's products are sold, or sales are overseas, outside the United States. That would put a tremendous a break on Caterpillar sales, for example, which would reflect on manufacturing in the U.S. and probably put a lot of people on the street again.
Well, I hate to tell you this, Mike, but you know what? Caterpillar's in Illinois, where I am. All right, Caterpillar sells most of their stuff to Asia, okay? They're not selling anything over in Europe. Europe is in decline.
What happens if the dollar rises, the euro falls? What are the Chinese going to do?
The Chinese are pegged to the dollar.
So they'd be happy with that.
What's that? What are they going to do after that?
No. In other words, if the euro falls and the dollar rises, proportionate let's say the euro falls to a dollar rather than $1.34, do the Chinese dump dollars or do they suddenly hold on to their T-bills?
The Chinese are going to hold on because they're locked to the dollar. They're tied to the dollar. That's how they protected themselves from getting screwed by the U.S. We didn't want them to be tied to our dollar, but they're a little bit smarter than you give them credit for, okay?
That's right. They would not reflect that in their yuan. There was a demand for 10 years for them to revalue the yuan, and they wouldn't do it. That's how they dumped so much garbage on our shores and built up such a trade surplus with us, because they had a control over the currency. Apparently, they shoot money speculators in China. They didn't permit the Soroses in China to wreck their yuan. The government controlled the value of the yuan, not the Chinese George Soroses. So let's be honest here. They don't permit currency speculation, do they?
No, they really don't. And the thing is...
See? You know, I'm a talk show host, but people don't understand that I know an awful lot about finance. I never disclose this. But I know a lot more about finance than people may expect from a mere talk show host. But you're a currency trader, and you pretty much know that I know what I'm talking about by what we just discussed, correct?
Absolutely, you do, Mike. Okay.
But you did something in this call that really made me feel good. When I read Mail Online, man who broke the Bank of England, George Soros, at center of hedge funds betting against crisis at Euro, the first thing that came to my mind is, why would a guy who makes billions of dollars tell a newspaper that he's betting against the Euro? I certainly sense that he's betting for the euro.
I can only tell you that he is a smart man, and he takes his lumps, okay? He's not always right. I'm not defending him.
I'd like to see him wearing a barrel with suspenders around them. I think he's done so much damage on this earth, I'd like to see the man wearing a barrel with suspenders. I don't respect men like him. He's the man who gave us Barack Hussein Obama. Never forget that. I'll be right back.
Savage.
I'm not surprised by what Obama's doing. The problem here is that this big sis is totally unqualified to be a Supreme Court justice. This big sis is unqualified. The second problem is she may just be a trial balloon. Wrong word. I believe that Obama knows that she's going to be rejected first by the American blogosphere, of which I'm a part in a sense, the talko blogosphere, the blogo talkosphere, not to be confused with Blagojevich, but the blogo talkosphere. So the first line of defense against these people is the blogo talkosphere or the talko blogosphere. He knows that she's then going to be grilled so strongly that they'll withdraw her name. So she's not so much a trial balloon. He knows she's going to be rejected before she even gets to the hearings. What he's then going to do is bring up someone who is even more radical than Elena Kagan. Whether you know it or not, Elena Kagan, as communistic as she is rejected by most of the left for not being enough of a fascist. She's not fascistic enough for them. They actually reject her for not being a tougher left winger. So what Obama's going to do, his handlers, Rahm Emanuel, never underestimate the son of an Israeli revolutionary. Rahm Emanuel, the man you well know from the towel in the locker room, and David Axelrod, the man from the same background as Elena Kagan, the same oil cloth, the same seltzer bottles, the same posters of Trotsky on the living room wall, or they didn't have mobiles in those days over the crib. They had pictures of Marx and Trotsky dancing they had them painted on the ceiling of the crib. Those people are very smart. They're very, very dangerously smart. I believe that they're running Kagan up the flagpole to have her rejected so they could say, damn those Republicans, damn those right-wingers in the media. We're going to withdraw this wonderful person, even though she's so qualified. They're so mean and so intolerant. So here's our next choice. The next choice will be probably more radical and even less qualified than Elena Kagan. And then the Republicans will jump over themselves to accept the next one. That's my theory. We'll keep talking about this and other topics on the show today, but let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. So there it is, the Supreme Court. First, we had to suffer through Ruth Bader Ginsburg, the former chief counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union, which, as you well know, is a communist front group. The most destructive organization in the history of America has been the ACLU. It acts as though it's another avenue of government. Everything that the schmucks do, they ask what the ACLU thinks of it. You hear this? Whether a bullet can be fired in Afghanistan, it has to go through some pockmarked lunatic in New York City's Lower East Side to see what he thinks about it first. So we had that to deal with. Now we have to deal with the Supreme Court under Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Can you imagine those two, what they're going to do to Alito and Roberts and Thomas on the Supreme Court? Can you imagine the terror they're going to use on those men once they put the two of them in black robes? Can you imagine what will go on in that Supreme Court? It's amazing. We can never survive this. Never. Look, forget that she's a radical feminist. Forget her sexual orientation, which is all over the blogosphere of what it really is. I don't really give a damn. I don't care if she's a lesbian. It doesn't matter to me. I'll tell you that right now. And I want to go on record, and I want you to write it down. I don't care if someone is gay or a lesbian. I never did. I have said this over and over and over again, but people keep taking me out of context. There is a subgroup within the gay and lesbian community that uses gay and lesbianism to promote a radical leftist agenda. They use it to beat people up and threaten them. It has nothing to do with sexual orientation. It's a ploy to control people by saying you're anti-gay, you're anti-lesbian. That's what I've always objected to. You know, Playboy comes out with the big June issue in 3D, and it's, strangely enough, it's the issue that has the 8,000-word interview about me, Michael Savage. No doubt, it's going to be the biggest selling issue they've ever had because of me in 3D. My words will be in 5D, but I will only be in 3D. The girls will be in 4D, and you'll probably be in 2D. But the fact of the matter is, in this article, I know that it was an open-ended interview, and it went on for 8 hours. 3.5 hours on a Friday night. 3.5 hours the next day with a tape running the next day. And I do know this. He kept bringing up issues about sexuality over and over again. He said, look, you do know that we're a magazine about sex. I said, I know. So he kept asking me, where do you stand on gays? Where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on... I said, do you want to hear the whole story? Or do you want to hear the snapshot over and over again? Maybe this will finally put to rest the lie about Michael Savage. I am a sexual libertarian. I understand people's sexuality is their own damn business. I do not want the government regulating anybody's sexuality except when it comes to the exploitation of children. I want to be very clear about that. But I also want to say that just as people who happen to be African-American have been used by the radical left to promote the radical left agenda, and that any African-American who is not of the radical left persuasion is never heard from. Never. The same is true with regard to gays and lesbians. If a gay or a lesbian is political and they're not to the left, far to the left of center, they're never heard from. They're disappeared. They're ostracized.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
We'll be right back.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Listening to the Savage Nation. I'm the Barber of Seville to the Barbarians on the Hill. Just give me a minute, please. Listen to this from a dead white male. Imagine what we have now, whiny chick music and crack music, wherever you turn. Listen to the end of this. Listen to how this mind worked. It brings me to tears to think that there were minds on the planet like this. Listen to how he builds this. Listen to the mind. Okay? Just let yourself go. Go with it. Okay, here we go. We heard this, but you didn't know who it was. Higher, 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 higher. Higher. So you can't stand it anymore. So we have gone from the Barber of Seville to the Barbarians on the Hill. This is the Savage Nation talking about all of those things. You know, you listen to Rossini's Barber of Seville. I heard it the other day in a car. I said, I got to play it for a minute, take a chance. Look how fast this man's mind could be. Listen how fast it was. Pre-drug mind. And you have musicians today, so-called musicians. They're basically barbarians faking it as musicians. Everything is ersatz, the painting, the music, you name it. A collapsed, broken society with false idols everywhere you turn, whether they're false preachers or false musicians. Whatever, false scientists, whatever you want to do, wherever you turn, ersatz, you know what I'm saying? Mayonnaise, not butter, whichever way you want to look at it. Margarine, not butter, whichever way you want to look at it. Olive-like, not olive, you know. And you ask yourself, how did this happen? How did the people become so denatured? And it's mystifying, actually, to think. It doesn't happen overnight. So if you think you're going to turn it around overnight, you're mistaken. When a thing like this happens to a society, it doesn't turn around overnight just because you know it, or because a million of us know it, or 10 million of us know it, or 30 million of us know it. You got to remember, it's a world of 5 billion people, most of whom live in the darkness of getting and spending. The darkness of getting and spending. The darkness of buying and selling. The darkness of entertaining themselves and shopping. The darkness of looking at sluts in Hollywood as the role models, not Martha Washington. The darkness of looking at fakers in Hollywood who are pretending to be heroes when the real heroes of the world are never seen nor heard, whether they be in Afghanistan or in Iraq or in a hospital room or at a ward for crippled children. You never see these people. And so we live in the darkness. That in some ways, it's worse than the darkness in the Middle Ages. In some ways, although we are certainly better off physically than our ancestors were, although that's debatable unto itself, would you say that we live in the light, living in a society that we live in today? You know, you look at men in the suburbs, the white suburbs. You say, oh, that's the lily white suburbs. It's all good there. And I see men with children and wives. They're probably decent people. They dress like boys. I just look and I don't understand it. How can a grown man walk around with shorts, I ask myself, and a hat on backwards pushing a stroller? Does he look at himself in the mirror? I mean, I'm not the sartorial expert of the world, but something, there's something in that image that I feel as though like from another planet sometimes. A grown man pushing a carriage wearing shorts and a hat on backwards trying to look like an 11-year-old boy. How does this happen? The father looks like Beavis and Butthead. Anyway, from the Barber of Seville to the Barbarians on the Hill was the little quip. Now we're going to play the Brandenburg Concerto by Johann Sebastian Bach. And think how we've fallen from the Brandenburg Concerto to crack music and whiny chick music in department stores in just so short a period of time. And you're telling me the dead white male has nothing to teach you? I would argue to the contrary. Let's hear a little bit of the Brandenburg Concerto so you know what greatness is. Does the mind still hear this? Does the American mind still hear any? I don't know anymore. Am I allowed to come out from behind the curtain? Can I come out from behind the image? Am I allowed to show this side of myself to you, the people, the listeners, the wonderful listeners of the Savage Nation who have given me so much love, respect? Dare I play a thing like this and tell you how it breaks my heart to play it? To think that we live in a debased society where goons from the gutters are held up as role models for your children to look at. Goons from the gutters held up as musicians when they are nothing. They're not musicians. Goons from the gutters held up as artists by con men in the record companies and the movie companies. Goons from the gutters held up as role models, and you wonder why every minute they pull out a gun and shoot each other. You wonder why boys pull out a gun and shoot each other at a moment's notice because goons from the gutters are held up as role models. You're taking your son to a concert to hear the Brandenburg Concerto? Of course not. That's not a concert. A concert is a bunch of drugged, stoned out sex maniacs throwing themselves around on the ground. That's a concert today. Yeah, all right, say it's just the rantings of an old man. What do I care what you say? You know, I'm as much a hedonist as the next man. I can enjoy myself as much as you can, I can guarantee you. I know how to enjoy myself. I know how to have a drink. I know how to have a good time, believe me. But that doesn't mean I have to roll in the mud with the pigs in order to have a good time. And it means that I can tell you when the pigs are rolling in the mud of your mind, if you don't mind. That's all I'm going to say on the matter. Just play it for a minute, and I'll come back to my reality here of politics as usual on the Savage Nation. Politics as usual, the barbarians on the hill running our lives. Big Sis in charge of Homeland Security, stripping the braces off a four-year-old boy. Big Sis in charge of Homeland Security. Defense Secretary Robert Gates saying I'm not going to go there when the word Muslim came up. Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff saying he's worried about the consequences of an attack on Iran, not knowing which side they're playing for. You don't know which side of the what team are they playing for? You don't know it. We don't know it. There's nothing clear for us anymore. The government is confusing us by telling us that they don't know what to do except to control us, not the enemy. Yeah, bring in more Muslims so they can become cab drivers and deny blind people and their seeing eye dog the right to a taxi ride, and then protect the Muslim cab driver, saying it's his religious right. Don't you understand what's happening to your country right in front of your eyes? Because you let liberalism, the mental disorder, take over the nation? That is why we're losing it all. It's a philosophy, Jake. It all starts with a philosophy. As so many times have I quoted Blake, the great 19th century poet who said, "The eye that alters, alters all." Don't you remember that quote? And I'm trying to say it to you because I'm not trying to prove how smart I am. Listen to what Blake was saying. The eye that alters, alters all. Once the eye is altered, meaning if you're a little nuts, everything is altered. And so we have a government now with altered eyes that have altered all. That's what he was trying to say. They may as well all be on LSD for how they're treating the people of this country. They may as well all be stoned out of their minds on some kind of drug, which is not to say they are, but they may as well be, because their altered eye is altered all. That's what we, the people, are trying to say to them. The people know more about their lives than the government does. The people know more about a balanced budget than the government does. The people know more about not taking in any more immigrants than the government does. The people know more about these things than career bureaucrats who have never created a product or a service that anybody ever wanted. Because if they did, they would be on a welfare line themselves. They would never have produced the product anybody wanted, and that's why they're in government. And so they continue to produce services nobody wants with your money. And now you wonder why people are angry, why there's a rebellion in this country. You can call it a right-wing rebellion if you want to target the right. I don't care. Say what you want. I'm proud to say it's a rebellion on the right, but believe me, it's a rebellion from the middle. That's the one thing the New York Times didn't get right in that article, amongst others. Tea Party lights fuse for rebellion on right. It's not a rebellion on the right. It's a rebellion from the center. This is a rebellion of the middle class. This is a rebellion of Joe and Sarah. This is a rebellion of people who have worked hard all their lives, and they've lost their jobs, they've lost their houses, and they don't know why. And they see fat cats on Wall Street getting bailed out by Obama, who talks the talk but doesn't walk the walk. A man who says he's for the little people and supports the big people who put him in office. A man who says he's the taking on the banks when in fact it's the banks who took him and put him into the presidency. It's a man who says he's for balancing the budget when he breaks the budget. It's a man who deals with the biggest money trader on planet Earth, who could break the dollar overnight and then say, whoops, I don't know how that happened, even though I just had dinner with him, because he visited the White House 35 times, according to the White House logs. So we're not so stupid. It's the age of the internet. Most people know what's going on. It's not 1950. You know, suddenly it's not 1967 either. And that's all I want to say about that.
Savage.
When I was a little boy in the United States of America, the son of immigrants, my mother would proudly tell me that the difference between America and Europe at that time was that we had a giant middle class, a spectrum, of course, of people in the middle class, from lower, middle, and upper middle class. But nevertheless, there was a gigantic middle class in America that distinguished this nation from Europe after World War II. I don't have to take you back into ancient history to know that at one time there were serfs and landowners, the princes and the serfs. That was all ended somewhere in the middle 1500s, I believe, when people were permitted to own their own land. And that was the end of the serfdom. That was a great step forward for humankind when people could own their own piece of land. So we have, through America, seen the growth of a tremendous middle class where most people own their own properties, their own houses, their own apartments, their own condos, whatever. That's a good thing. That's what makes us unique and great, different from any other society on earth. Until very recently, when something changed, a dramatic shift occurred in this bell curve, the rich, the middle, and the poor. The bell curve, looking at it as though it's strictly a bell, with a big middle, big fat middle, big bell, big fat middle bell, big fat middle on the bell, middle class. Suddenly that shrunk. It shrunk. Honey, I shrunk the kids. And the big middle started to disappear, diminish. Millions of people lost their jobs, lost their houses, lost their families. That's what this so-called revolution is going on, that's going on in this country. That's where it's coming from. So now let me ask you something. Certainly Obama didn't start this. Bush did. But I called Bush a fiscal socialist, as I tell you, over 2 years ago. I was on to that fact that the Republicans were all part of the same conspiracy, albeit in a different track. I know about the Bilderbergs. I know about all of that stuff. But at the risk of your displeasure, those of you on the right, I'm not going to go into the Bilderbergs. I'm not going to go into the CFR. I'm fully aware of their interconnections to the banks on Wall Street and the governments that we have in the Senate and the Federal Reserve. Believe me, I could talk chapter and verse, but I choose not to at this time. I want to stick to the bell curve. So, America was distinguished by the big, big middle. Are you bored yet? If you are, I can move on. We can talk about lingerie in Saudi Arabia. I mean, whatever you want to do, I'll go with you. I hear that they're banning lingerie in Saudi Arabia. Take a look at the women over there. You know why. I don't know. Wonder the women don't want lingerie in Saudi Arabia. Most of the men are in Paris picking. Okay, let's stop right there, but I don't want to get distracted. Okay, so the middle class starts to disappear, And there's actually a growth curve in the rich. There's a growth curve in the rich and a growth curve in the poor, and the middle class is shrinking. So we're becoming a two-class society. We're moving towards becoming a two-class society rather than a three-class society. You see what I'm getting at? And where did we last see the two-class society? Well, many places, but most typically in the Marxist socialist states, where there is clearly a two-class society. What you don't know is that these workers' paradises have a two-class society. You have the bureaucrats who work for the government, who live fairly well. They get the food. They have the dachas. They had the private houses out in the country. They had government cars and chauffeurs. And the other people lived on the, you know, fighting for the one salami hanging in the butcher shop that I keep talking about, because the agrarian revolution didn't work when it was run by the government. Now, of course, that's all changed. I recognize that. The Soviet Union is a hybrid in some ways. They have very little, in many ways, social freedoms are very diminished. But economically, they're in some ways more conservative, fiscally more conservative than we are. It's hard to believe, isn't it? But the Soviet Union is probably more fiscally conservative than the United States of America is right now. But it goes back to what I told you years ago in the Savage Nation. I was a big reader as a youngster, and one of the people I read everything he wrote was Aldous Huxley, Brave New World, you know. Huxley wrote in 1950 that in the future, he said, as the Soviet becomes more like, excuse me, in 1950 he wrote that as America and the Soviet Union interact, the Soviet Union would become more like America and America would become more like the Soviet Union. Enter stage left, Barack Obama.
Savage.
You're listening to an encore segment of Michael Savage.
Germany, 1967. The children of the Nazi generation have grown up in the ruin their parents created. They vowed fascism would never rule their country again. In their fight for freedom, they lost themselves in the cause.
There are more from us drin als draußen.
And ignited a revolution around the world. The Baader-Meinhof Complex, based on the true story of the Red Army faction.
Come on, pigs of Western civilization. Eat more grease. Eat more marbled sirloin, more pork and gravy. Lard up the dressing. Fried chicken in boiling oil. Carry it dribbling to gray climes, snowed with salt. Little lambs covered with mint roast in racks, surrounded by roast potatoes wet with butter sauce. Buttered veal medallions in creamy saliva. Buttered beef by glistening mountains of French fries. Right. Stroganoffs in white hot sour cream. Chops soaked in olive oil. Surrounded by olives. Salty feta cheese. Followed by Roquefort, Blue and Stilton. Thirsty for wine, beer, Coca-Cola, Fanta, Champagne, Pepsi, Retsina, Arak, whiskey, vodka. Ah!
You know the day destroys the night. Night divides the day.
I don't know how one old hippie listening to this show can't be having a great time. Welcome back to the Savage Nation, all you old hippies. All you young hippies. All you future hippies. All you non-hippies. All you ex-hippies. And all you Obama hippies. Welcome to the Savage Nation. So here I am, trying to show you the connection between Obama and the Marcuse school of quiet socialism that has gone on in this country, and how he is, let us hope, the last in a long line of those who have gone into the administration, into the system to corrupt it and overturn it and turn it into a socialist system. He was not the first, but let's hope that Obama, being so radical and so immature and trying to push through so much so fast, has awakened the sleeping giant of America. All the men who packed the silos with corn finally have awakened to what has happened to their country. All of the men who raise pigs and cows and wheats and soy. All of the men and women who drive the tractors and drive the trucks. All the men who ride jackhammers and work on the high rises, the low rises, ride the low riders, the high riders. In other words, all of America finally waking up to the fact that we're all about to descend into slavery in this country, all under the hands of this guy pretending to be Robin Hood when he's nothing but a shill for the New World Order socialists who have virtually taken over all avenues of this government, in my opinion. Of course, it's only one man's opinion, and I recognize that many of you will not accept what I am saying. You'll say, come on, get off it. Don't exaggerate. Don't be a drama queen. He's just trying to take away some of the excess in the medical system and make it more fair. Well, that's one way to look at it, except when you really look at it, which you haven't done, and I did, because I do it for a living. I looked at it. The premiums go up. The care goes down. The government decides whether you live or die. There is no reining in the greedy, disgusting, verminous tort lawyers. There's no limitation on health care for the illegal alien parasites who have invaded America and don't deserve anything for free, but they're going to get it. So don't tell me this is about fairness. This is about a ripoff, to use a 60s phrase. But I don't want to get too excited. I just want to have a good time. Because boys just want to have a good time, and I'm just going to have a good time. And so I want to go back to Freud's idea of pansexualism, because if I say sex, I'm going to get your attention even more than I already have it. And so one of the main ideas of the Frankfurt School of socialism under Herbert Marcuse, the grandfather, the philosophical grandfather of Obama, was to exploit Freud's idea of pansexualism, which I try to tell you a little bit about, you know, attack the authority of the father, search for pleasure at all costs, always tell the people that they deserve pleasure, should have pleasure, must have pleasure, will have pleasure, don't deny pleasure. Pleasure's the reason you're not feeling good. Your doctor says, have pleasure. How come you're not having pleasure? Why don't you have pleasure? Why are you denying pleasure? Have pleasure. Do it in the road. Wherever it feels good, do it. Have it in the road. Do it in the road. Sex is good for you. Have pleasure. Do pleasure. Be pleasure. You are pleasure. You are only the pleasure principle. You're all id. You're no ego. You're no superego. You're nothing but a walking id. You're nothing but a walking id. You're nothing but a walking id. Have pleasure. Have pleasure. Have pleasure, have pleasure. Porn here, porn there. Here's porn, there's porn. Eat candy, do candy, here's drugs. Here's porn, there's porn. Everywhere, porn, porn. Once there were Gideon Bibles, now there's porn even in Marriott hotels. Here's the porn, have some pleasure. It's good for you. Destroys the marriage, destroys the family, destroys the kids. All part of the socialist objective. Have some porn, here's some porn. Want some porn? Want some porn? Here's some porn. Turn the porn on. Corporate accounts, turn the porn on. The school believed there were two types of revolution, A, political, and B, cultural. Cultural revolution demolishes a society from within. Does that sound like something that you understand? Family, education, media, sex, popular culture. Has there been a revolution or hasn't there been? Well, that's what we're talking about. That's why a guy like me, a guy who went through the 60s and was kind of like, wait a minute, where are we going with this? Who's behind this? Who lived through the whole peace and love bull crap of the 1960s and saw the guys with the peace signs in their hands who were the drug dealers, the guys who try to rip off your old lady, the guys who try to break into your house when you turned your back. Oh, but they had the long hair and they had the hippie glasses. I wasn't conned for 1 minute. I was never taken in by it. Let's all share, man, as long as it was your stuff they were sharing. I know the whole game. Believe me, I know where they're coming from. Nobody hates hippie pigs more than I do. So don't think you're fooling me, all you Berkeleyite phony. Okay, I'll stop right there. So there was a political and a cultural revolution. And what does that mean today? What it means today is that the witch hunt that you are seeing on today's campuses, the witch hunt you are seeing, for example, going on against Michael Savage wherever you turn, the blacklisting of Michael Savage in Britain, the blacklisting by certain advertising agency, the fear amongst certain people about Michael Savage, all unfounded, because I'm actually the true patriot. I'm actually representative of America. They've tried to demonize me, and they've done so with many people because they control the media. So the witch hunts that are going on today in the media on the campuses is the implementation of Marcuse's concept of repressive toleration. Write this one down. What is repressive toleration? It is the tolerance for movements from the left, but intolerance for movements from the right. And that is exactly what we're living through on the universities in the media. Tolerance for movements from the left, but intolerance for movements from the right. So they tolerate vermin at MSNBC who are talentless left-wing Obamaite hacks, and they demonize a guy like Michael Savage, who is revered and loved by millions of people who have a brain and are not drug-addled. I take you back in time to the Biedermannhof gang in Germany in the 70s. You don't have to actually know who Bieder was or who Meinhof was to understand what I'm about to tell you. I'll just tell you in short, the Biedermannhof gang was a radical left-wing group of machine gunners and bombers who attacked the middle class, kidnapped, all in the name of peace, justice, and love. Now, they supported the Arab cause. They hated Jews in Israel. They claimed they hated Zionism. not Jews, but of course they hated Jews and Zionism, being the grandchildren or the children of Nazis. They really didn't fall far from the tree. Although they posed as leftists who are out for social justice and in favor of the Third World and the Third World liberation theology, by the way, which Obama was fed for 20 straight years at his church, in his colleges, etc., liberation theology. You heard all of that, Third World liberation theology. It's exactly what Obama was bred and schooled in. And the Obama-Biden-Monhoff connection is what I want to talk about today. So that when we talk about the health care bill, which is going to come up over and over again, you have to understand how this connects to the radicals going back to the Biden-Monhoff gang, who were influenced by the writings of Mao Zedong and the philosophers associated with what is called the Frankfurt School, and Marxist philosophers such as Herbert Marcuse. Now, many of you have heard of Herbert of Saul Alinsky and Bill Ayers, but you may not have heard of Herbert Marcuse. Herbert Marcuse was the founder of the Frankfurt School of Marxist theory. And one of the main ideas of the Frankfurt School was that instead of outright revolution and social disruption, the left would allow society to continue providing goods and services and to defend the nation, while they, the left-wing intellectuals, would take charge of education, manipulate the public with media propaganda, corrupt morality through the entertainment industry, and infiltrate government bureaucracy at all levels. Does it sound familiar? This is exactly what Barack Obama has succeeded in doing. He's not the first, but he certainly should be the last in this long line of Marxist revolutionaries who have been in the White House. I would say Bill Clinton was the first. We also know that Obama's childhood mentor, Frank Marshall Davis, was a member of the Communist Party. We know that Obama admits attending, quote, socialist conferences. We know that Obama admits reading Marxist literature. We know that Obama became a community organizer and came into contact with the Democratic Socialists of America, who then endorsed his campaign for Illinois State Senate. And we know that Obama became friends with William Ayers, a member of the socialist group Students for a Democratic Society, which was a violent group, by the way. And yet now Obama has infiltrated government bureaucracy to the highest level of all. The Biden-Monhoff gang used violence to try to achieve socialism, and they failed. They were defeated. But Obama was more faithful to Herbert Marcuse and his plan to infiltrate government peacefully, and he has succeeded beyond his wildest dreams. And so that is why I want to talk about Obama and the reverse Robin Hood myth and the health care proposal and the Maoists, Marxists, and other communists known as czars in the administration and what you can do about it.
Savage.
Savage University of Higher Learning. So we're going beyond the day-to-day because it's of interest. I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? See, if you focus, okay, Obama's pushing to give to the poor and he's just a nice guy trying to help those who don't have and take from the pigs on the top. That's one scenario, but it's all false because, as I pointed out, is there one poor person listening to this show who's benefited at all from Obama? I don't think so. There are none. He's actually trying to steal from the middle class to give to the rich, to the cronies who put him in power. It came out that Obama's called for increasing payroll taxes on households earning less than $250,000. And that's an apparent breach of his oft-repeated pledge. He will also increase taxes on interest, dividends, annuities, royalties, and rents, all aimed at those making less than $250,000. So he violated another one of his primary campaign goals, that he was not targeting the middle class, which he is. But you say, well, okay, we understand that, and that's good. But I want to take it back so you know where we're going. See, if you don't know where he's coming from, and you just, like, get shocked every day by another slap from Obama and his Marxist minions, you're not going to know where they want to take you. This is a revolution that's going on in America, and it's not good for anybody. The revolution ends badly for everybody. And so, as I say to you, this is a quiet cultural revolution, not one of violence, although you could argue that instead of unleashing the Biden-Manhoff gang with bombs in the streets, he's unleashed the military on Afghanistan. I mean, I wouldn't go that far, but one could make that analogy. What's interesting to me about the war in Afghanistan is this. Where are the street protests? How come there was such a huge outcry against the Iraq war from the radical phony leftists, and there's hardly a peep out of them now? The answer is because they were never against the war in Iraq. They're only against Republicans and Bush. And because now that the Democrats are running the war, the bombs have Ds on them, and therefore the bombs are good bombs. Any bomb with a D on it is a good bomb. Any bomb with a D, any bullet with a D on it is a good bullet. It doesn't really matter to them. They were never against the war. They were against Republicans and Bush. And so, again, they were just trying to undermine the Republican administration, which they did do. They undermined the war on terror, which is why we now have a civil trial for one of the worst mass murderers in history, a man who masterminded, on our soil, rather, he masterminded the 9/11 attacks, and yet they have sympathy for him, while Lieutenant Behenna has absolutely no support, and he's rotting in Fort Leavenworth. It's interesting to me that many of my listeners were self-identified liberals of the 60s, and they don't really know what their identity is today. They're not really a leftist or a progressive because they know that most of them are phonies, and it's all hot air rhetoric that's used to grift people out of things. But they're not willing to say they're a conservative, and I don't blame them because when you see the fake conservatives out there, I know they don't want to identify with that. So they call themselves an independent or a moderate, which is probably more close to the truth than it is. But many of my listeners who call themselves moderate or libertarians or independents are actually liberals. They're actually true liberals. What you don't understand is that the whole definition of what a liberal is has changed. So let's not worry so much about definitions. Let's worry instead or focus instead on what a hardcore Maoist, Marxist, socialist is and what he wants to do to the United States of America and what he is actually doing under the guise of helping people get health care right now. And so you have to go back to Herbert Marcuse and the Frankfurt School, okay? And so the Frankfurt School was a conspiracy to take over a country through a quiet cultural revolution, not through violence as was done by the Biedermannhof gang and the other members of the Red Brigade. And I want to talk about this again over and over again today because it's so important for you to know the danger you're actually in. Give me some hard hippie music of the 60s. The Constitution, well, you know, we all want to change your head. You tell me it's the Institution. Okay, well, so you get the picture. So even the Beatles were singing songs about revolution, encouraging the youth to drop the mores of the middle class, to overthrow their parents' strictures, to tell everyone that they were free and liberated and they were going to, you know, bring about a new order, a new society. And what they don't understand is they actually have brought about a new order and a new society. And who's sitting here listening to the show could say it's a better order and a better society than the one that your parents had? I'd like to know anyone listening to the show tells me you're living in a safer world, a cleaner world, a more moral world, because it just is not true. So I want to go back to what I said before. All of this stems back to the Frankfurt School. We talked about that. We talked about the new left guru of the 60s, Herbert Marcuse. And now I want to advance what they built their Frankfurt School of Socialism upon, which was Freud's idea of pansexualism, the search for pleasure. The search for pleasure became one of the operational methodologies to break people's social mores down, because if they broke you down morally, they could break you down every other way, and they could remold you in the form of the new man that the socialists have always talked about. And so they continue to teach you to search for pleasure. To do this, they exploited the differences between the sexes. They try to overthrow the traditional relationships between men and women. And to further their aims, we read, here's what they were going to do: attack the authority of the father, deny the specific roles of father and mother, take away from families their rights as primary educators of their children, abolish the differences in the education of boys and girls, abolish all forms of male dominance, such as the presence of women in the armed forces. And by the way, we read that this dingbat defense secretary is now pushing the submarine fleet to put women on submarines. They're going to have to accommodate women by rebuilding the submarines to accommodate women. But here we are. Got excited, found a Sauvignon Blanc I could drink. Lorenzo makes one. I didn't get a headache. I mean, that to me is a miracle. I can drink wine again. I feel liberated. I said, Lorenzo, do you use malolactic fermentation? No, I don't use it. No malolactic fermentation. I said, good. Thank God. No headache-o. No malolactico, no headache-o. That's all I know. Because I gave up on the New Zealand wines. They became too fruity. I don't know. It was with the lemon-lime. I felt like I was drinking 7-Up. Years ago when I used to drink wine, I'm slipping into the food now. Okay, I do it. I can't find a good white wine anymore. 20 years ago, I used to drink, if I was lucky, I went to someone's house, they had a Grand Cru Chablis. We drank a lot of French Chablis when it was really good. Then there was the Grand Cru Chablis, which a professor friend had. I never heard anything like it. Then there was Batard Chasson. It was unbelievable, white wines then. Then all of a sudden, something happened with white wine. They became, I don't know what they did to them, creamy, fruity. Sorry to tell you, a lot of the children who grew up drinking soda started drinking wine. They didn't like the actual taste of wine. They wanted a soda with alcohol. So it's hard to find, you know. There's no such thing. And New Zealand used to make a great, when it was the Marlboro New Zealand Sauvignon Blanc, it was a different story with a slight tinge of the limey in it, you know. Even though the limey's made it, it was a slight tinge of limey. Then all of a sudden now it's like soda. It's like lemon limey. It's like drinking on a machine in a it's like going for lemon limey in a Lois Pitkin. You are listening to the Savage Nation, the one and only Savage Nation.
Savage.